Welcome to the Coach Growth Podcast, where we hope to provide value and learning to not only young and new coaches, but all coaches who want to continue to grow. I am your host, Coach Andrew McGackie. If you get something out of today's episode, please leave a rating and a review, and don't forget to subscribe so you can stay up to date on the latest episodes. Lastly, follow me on Twitter, at Coach McGackie, that's M-C-G-H-G-H-Y, and don't be afraid to reach out with any coaches or topics you want to hear me talk about.
Welcome back, guys, to Season 3 of the Coach Growth Podcast. This episode is an interview with Coach Derek Leonard. As you start to listen to it, you'll realize that this interview took place two football seasons ago, so the spring COVID season of football that we had here in Illinois. I had posted it, and when I listened back to it before, between Season 2 and Season 3, I found a couple editorial issues that I really needed to take care of, so I deleted it to go back and re-edit it. And then, like the podcast in general, like many things, it just time got away from me, and so I'm re-uploading it now. Hopefully, if you listened to it the first time, I recommend listening to it again. It's a great episode. If you didn't hear it the first time it is up, well, here you are listening to it for the first time. And so here is my interview with Coach Derek Leonard, head football coach at Rochester in Rochester, Illinois. Enjoy.
All right, everybody, I'm joined by a man who, if you're familiar with Illinois high school football, needs no introduction, but his name's Derek Leonard. He's the head football coach at Rochester, easily one of the best coaches in the state, head coach of a perennial powerhouse, eight-time state champion as a head coach, a record of 157-32, only three postseason losses, you know, incredible stats, seven-time state champion in 4A, and most recently going up to 5A in 2019 and winning state there. So obviously just an incredible resume already, and as far as head coaches, still relatively young when you think of a record like that in the grand scheme of things. Coach, how are you?
Good. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
No problem. A quick tidbit. I actually kind of grew up in high school. I was a big Rochester football fan because I'm from Carthage, Illini West, and we hated Quincy Notre Dame growing up. And Rochester was always the team that kicked Q&D out of the playoffs. So I always pulling for Rochester in the postseason, even though I had no relation to the school whatsoever, other than the fact that you guys were the ones that beat Q&D all the time.
Yeah, God, we had a run. I think it was about five out of 6 years we played them. Yeah, which was crazy, and got lucky enough. And they had some good teams, probably that 2010 team. They're 9-10, and my teams were 9-10, were the 2 years we matched up, and got lucky in both of them, but they were good. They were physical, big, and they were tough. I do remember that. So
yeah, that year I remember they were ranked first in 4A, and we won the 3A state championship that year. We were ranked first in 3A, and we played them at home. And as a player and a coach, that was the biggest, except for the state championship game, that was the biggest high school football game I'd ever seen. Like a couple thousand people there, which, you know, if you're listening and you're from like Texas or Georgia or something, might not seem much, but for small town Illinois football, that's a big crowd.
Big crowd.
So, well, Coach, let's hop right into it. As always, talk about, you know, tell us your story. How did you get into coaching? Why'd you get into coaching? That kind of thing.
Yeah. As you previously said, my dad was, Ken Leonard, and he coaches Sacred Heart Griffin, and he's been coaching my whole life. You know, he's the most winning coach in state of Illinois history right now. I don't know. I think he might be a 400. I don't know what he's at, but it's a lot. And so, man, that's what I grew up a part of, was sports. And so I knew if I couldn't play it, I wanted to coach or be around it, you know, in some way or fashion. And coaching, just, you know, learning from the best and being around all those guys, it's something that I enjoyed. And it could have been basketball. I love basketball. You know, I loved playing baseball. You know, I did all of it, but, just being around football and being a quarterback myself, and, it interests me, you know, and, just once I got into college, even in high school, I'd say I really knew what I was going to do and, the direction I wanted to go in. Didn't know college, high school, any of those things, just knew I wanted to coach. And I think I was leaning towards high school then, at the time. And so, made it easier, to get in, you know. I really didn't care what I taught. I just wanted to coach, you know, and I knew PE, not that it's the easiest, it is kind of the easiest, but, that was the avenue to get into coaching.
Did you start out coaching at Rochester? Was that your first coaching stop?
No, yeah, I was at Prairie Central. I got right out of college after at IC. Man, I met a guy at a clinic, Brian Hassett, who's actually going to the Hall of Fame this year. Just got lucky. It was a clinic he was speaking at in Springfield, actually. And I went with Dad, and Dad said, oh, you know, you find these jobs. You know, that's when you used to find jobs there. You didn't find them online. You went and you try to talk to people, and he started his talk like, hey, I need a coach if anyone's interested. So after he was done, I went up to him, and man, and got the job, you know, a few weeks later. And so, but yeah, that was at Prairie Central High School for 2 years as the O coordinator. And we were in Rochester's conference at the time, the Corn Belt Conference. And that job came open. I knew Dave Jacobs well, and I was actually getting married. And my wife, Lindsay, she's from Springfield. I was from Springfield. So, man, it was kind of God putting me in the perfect time, perfect place, you know, because I really didn't want to leave. You know, I loved Prairie Central. And but, man, it was, you know, God just, you know, it was Rochester. It was home. It was and obviously I made a good decision because it's a great place and a great place to raise my kids. And but yeah, I think I've been at Rochester now. I think this is my 16th year. So
that's crazy. It's you've 16 years. So you're 500 in seasons of winning a state title. That's crazy.
Yes, I guess. But I didn't think that, you know what, at first I never thought, like, you know, we were 3-6 and going out of the Corn Belt. I mean, if you'd have told me that, then I'd have said, come on, you know, our goal was to be state champs. I wanted to be state champs. You know, I thought, man, we could do it. It's been a crazy run, to be honest. But where it's came from, you know, football is only 26 years old in Rochester. I think I forget what year it's 98, 97, whatever that would be now, 22, 20, whatever. They haven't had football that long. You know, when I was in high school at Griffin, they were just starting it. So, you know, there was some newness to it. There were some cool things. But, yeah, it's 16 years seems long, and I still feel young, but I don't know.
Starting out, what was it like, you know, like your dad, Coach Ken Leonard, winning as head coach in the history of the state of Illinois? According to IHSA, did a little fact-checking, he's at 387 wins, according to the IHSA website. So – which is, you know, incredible, mostly at Sacred Heart Griffin, another school with an incredible amount of history and success. What was it like having that as a resource starting out? You know, did it make your job easier? Did you just go, you know, Dad, what do I do? Did he kind of draw it up for you? Did you know, are your philosophies different? That kind of thing.
No, our philosophies are very much the same. I learned a majority of what I do from him, obviously. And I tell people, hey, it's probably how I got my job. I was 24 when I got this job, and it's because my last name was Leonard, you know. Now, hey, I knew, and that it's like anything, it's who you know and right place, right time, right? And I knew I had to make my own name, and I planned on working hard and doing that. But hey, let's be honest, it was that. And from there, I had no. What I learned from him is that, you know, there was nothing arrogant. I mean, I wanted to learn. I wanted to learn from the best. I knew who, you know, he could connect me to people. His O-line coach, Coach Lewinsky, who was my O-line coach and quarterback coach, and he's dead now, but he was the best O-line coach. I mean, I learned so much from so many people, whether connected through my father or through Sacred Heart Griffin. And a lot of my coaches now played at Griffin, my linebacker coach, my D special teams coordinator is my D coordinator. My D coordinator coached at Griffin for years. So, man, the connections, you know, hey, you know who to follow and who you, right? I mean, if you want to win, it's no different than the NFL. Hey, when McVay has a year, everyone hires McVay people. When, you know, obviously the Patriots doing their thing. It's a copycat thing. And the ones, you know, you want to do your own thing, but you got to follow people that have been through it, who are veterans, who are older, and can show you the way. So many people try to just do it their way and don't listen to anybody. And a lot of times, man, there ends up being failure and they don't know how to adjust, you know? And so, like I said, I hope I was just smart enough to listen to him, you know?
you might have started out with the assistance of having the last name Leonard, but you've definitely paved a legacy of your own. Yes. So any, you know, there's nobody that can say that you're only the position you were because of who your dad is. I got to ask, you guys are in the same conference. So what's that like, one Friday a season, coaching across the field from your dad?
It's really hard. It was around here. It's like that Carthage QND game. You know, for 10 years now, it's been the game, you know, and each year it's usually for the conference. And at first it was huge. I mean, I remember, I think we had over 12,000 people at the first one. And that was the year we beat QND. That was the big one, 2010. So that was the first year we had gotten the Central State Eight. So we were in the Corn Belt with like BCC, Muhammad, Prairie Central, Pontiac. We got out of that and got into the Central State Eight. So that's kind of when we realized, hey, we're going to play each other. And so it sucks. We don't like it. He doesn't like it. I don't like it. And this was the first year. See, we usually, he goes his way 6 or 5A and we went 4A. Well, this was the first year we played each other in the playoffs in the quarterfinals last year. And got lucky one, but that was awful. Because it's one thing during the season, you know, and they've beat us more than we beat them. You learn a lot from that. Learn a lot from them, playing them. You know what I mean? You realize, hey, we're not physical enough. We can't stop the run. We can't stop the pass. They make you – they're so well coached and do so good. They make you bring out your flaws. So a lot of times it helped us. And win or lose, you usually come out good out of that game. And you don't have, you know, but the playoffs, man, you lose and you go home. And that feeling, that was the hardest game probably of my career, was that game. Stress before the hand because we had already beat them in the regular season. And so, it's not something we look forward to. It's exciting for our programs. It's exciting for the area. As competitors, we like it. But I know he hates it and I hate it as people and playing each other.
Do you still talk to each other Saturday morning after the, you know, or do you take a couple days to marinate?
No, we usually go to dinner afterwards. You know, it's one of those things where we got at first, yeah, even that my mom made us that first time, you know, we had the restaurant ready to go and a lot of family from everywhere came to that first one. And just some kind of tradition we kept, you know, and then we talk about, hey, what we saw from each other. Hey, you know, because he's real good. He'll tell you, hey, when your receiver stands like this, you know, it's a pass, it's a run, whatever. And so he'll give me all those things and you know, some tips or some tendencies they had on us. And if I have anything, I'll do the same with them, you know, and just say, hey, or hey, we ran at this guy because we think he was the weak, you know, the weak person. Or we avoided that person. Just so, you know, just like anything, hey, you pass ideas and sometimes you miss it. And so to have his eyes, and it's nice kind of when that game's over, because he could tell you, hey, this is not good or this is good.
So starting out at a young age as a head coach, taking over a relatively young program, what was that like for you? And then, you know, what were some of the things that you did differently that kind of instilled and set the foundation for the success that you've experienced?
Yeah, that's a great question. I was young and I didn't. I tell people I lived, you know what it was? It was day to day. It really, you know, I knew what I wanted to accomplish. I knew it was going to take a while, you know, anything you do. I mean, I think people, and it's hard because we're impatient people as humans. We want success immediately. And I want success immediately. I mean, if it could have came quicker, I would have loved that, but it didn't. But I didn't at that time. And at that age, I think I was, I was older than I was because I had been around it my whole life. I tell people, you know, I was like an assistant coach. So I saw steps and things it took. So being 24, I didn't feel I was 24 exactly in that position, if that makes sense. Now I learned a lot. And in some things I was very 24, but, from just grinding every day in the process, I think that's one of the best things I did is I just took it day to day and try to get as many kids out as I can. Try to make it fun. Try to be a good person. I try to treat people the right way. And I knew I was hoping that would come back. And, you know, you just treat people right. And it's all about relationships. And it's so true, you know, and you just do things the right way. And But I literally, man, to be honest, you just take it day by day, you know? And I think that's the, you get so hard on looking at how these people do it and how these, cause you look at, hey, you say 8 state championships. Now you think, oh, like you said, 50%. And I remember when it wasn't like that, you know, for, you know, we didn't get a playoff win in the first 3 years. And, it was tough. And, but I, again, it was just the next year, and it was the next year, and you just always concentrate and you're always fighting forward. And so, I hope that answered that question. It was a good question, but yeah, it was hard at that age though, too.
When you kind of got the ball rolling as a program, you know, win a state title, win another one, is it still for you, even after, you know, 8 state titles, is it still like a year-to-year process? Or, you know, once that you got some, you know, a level of sustained success, did you find that it was a lot easier to maintain that success?
Yeah, that's a good question too. It was easier because now it became who we are, you know, Rochester, when you ask someone Rochester, and it's not being arrogant. It's just, hey, so these kids have that same mentality. Hey, I want to play for Rochester football. I want to be the quarterback. I'm going to be a state champion. And I guess that doesn't make it does make it easier, but you know, I mean, the kids want to be a part of it. They want to be a part of that success. So eventually, hey, it did become easier in that standpoint. But at the same point, I try not to quit growing. I try not to quit learning. I'm always trying new stuff offensively. I'm always trying, you know what I mean? It's hard. But at the same point, it's like, hey, why would I ever change what I'm doing? You know, you get stuck in that sometimes, and that can be a scary place, you know, because you think, man, this would be good, but I'd be a fool if I change it and we get beat, you know, or not as good. So those things still cross your mind, but it does get easier. And I'd say, you know what, eventually it's not that it gets old, but you got to keep things fresh with kids today, you know, and you gotta do new things, and you can never let your guard down too much. So
philosophically, have there been any major changes over the years for, you know, you as a coach that you've instilled into your program?
You know, there hasn't. You know, slowly changes happen, you know, kind of with the no huddle, right? We were a no huddle team. And out of luck, we kind of became the fast no huddle team, right? Real fast. And it kind of started luck. I remember 2006, we couldn't score in the red zone. And I said, you know what? We were great from the 20 to 20. We could throw it everywhere. We had a great quarter. Will Lunt, who went to Western Illinois, played quarterback. And we could travel to the 20. We get inside the 15, 10, doomed, you know, that year before. So I said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to run four plays. We're going to run counter power. We're going to boot off it. Say another pass, right? And I said, I told Will, I said, I mean, you just call them. When we get there, you don't have to look over. Maybe third down, look over. But first, second down, I want you to call any of those four plays. And gosh dang, it worked. And I thought, man, we got to do this all the time. And we went verbal, and we changed how. So it's funny. And now that's what we do. That's our offense. You know, and it's been our offense for 15 years. And so it's just funny how things change. But philosophy-wise, we really haven't. And we're a gap scheme team. We're no huddle team defensively. Little things. And again, anytime you're not growing, man, and you're not thinking, and you're not changing things up, eventually it's going to catch up to you. And so philosophy-wise, I would say, but you know what? It's been pretty – it's like my dad. He's been pretty consistent. Like I said, there's been changes from the shotgun, the under center, but man, it was still quick game. It was still gap scheme. It was still these things. Again, you just adapt sometimes in those. And some years we change, and I think people consider us a throwing spread team. And a lot of times that's not the case. You know, we're probably much more of a running spread team. But some years, hey, we'll throw for, you know, with Wes Lunt and Nick Baker, we threw for about 5,000 yards, you know. Some years it's 2,500. And so it all matters, your personnel and getting the man the ball. You know, in the end, you got a high school, college, NFL, doesn't matter. You got to get whoever your guy is, whoever the man is, you got to get him the ball. My dad taught me that too. And however, you know, you can't just run the wing T offense. Just, you know, if you got an eye back, running back, well, you better be an eye back. You got a receiver, you better spread it out. You know, if you got quarterback, you better run the quarterback, how, whatever it is, and still do what you do, but change, you know, adapt it and make it flexible to your personnel and your people.
I think so. That would kind of fall in line with, you know, same formula, but again, it's a year to year thing. You know, your star player graduates. Well, who's the next guy up? Okay. Well, last year it was your tailback. This year it's your, you know, a wide out kind of guy. And it, a lot of things that when I try to look at like programming from year to year, whether it be like in the weight room with the linemen I coach or my track team, you know, it's like 80% is going to be the same every year. And then like, you know, that 15 to 20 range, that's where we toy with it. And that kind of changes, but you know, you got to figure out who you are as a coach and then stick with that. And then just slightly veer off as needed.
That's right. Cause everyone's different. These kids are different, you know, and you, like you said, you live by principles and you live by ways and you have a program, but at the same time, you have to adapt the thing, some of the, with your personnel, you know, like different linemen, man, we've had our linemen last year were, man, we were good. Probably one of my better lineman teams. This year, we're going to be a lot smaller, you know? And so how do we do those things? How do we utilize them and make them hopefully just as good? But we can't do what we did, right? We can't get into two tight ends. We can't get into one tight, you know, we're going to be a little bit more 10 personnel and, but still run the ball and be successful and still run gap scheme, you know? So that's exactly right.
So what are some nuggets for culture building, success building that you've, you know, figured out over the years that you can share with coaches that, you know, are trying to do the same thing for you, for their program?
Yeah. The biggest thing I think is you have to walk your walk and talk your talk. If you get around these guys, and I had these people as coaches too, and they, you know, they have these sayings and, you know, team and, well, you know, how you act, commit. And man, you know what? And then they weren't committed and they weren't, you know, they weren't always good people. Right. And the people that I respect and have learned the most from, and my father would be number one, but I've also had a lot of other great coaches in my life, and mentors, that, you know what, the people that I look up to the most are the people that truly, number one, probably I'd say loved me and loved their players and loves a, cared for them, you know, love sometimes a strong word, but cared for their players and truly had their best needs. You could tell that was the most important. And, but also then, man, walk the walk, you know, people that whatever they were preaching to you, they also followed. Doesn't mean they didn't sin or do wrong, but you know, when they do, you know, when they did do wrong. And I think that's the biggest thing is you, again, you get all these guys, and especially with Twitter and all this now, it's hard because you on Twitter and all those things, you just don't know who, unless I know you, I don't truly know who you are. And so for me to agree or disagree with something on Twitter or someone on Facebook, you know, I want people to judge me and know me who actually know me and who have been a part of my life and that I've had a relationship with. Those people then can say what I am. And so, yeah, I think, you know, when it all boils down, man, it is who you are as a person. And I bet you've had coaches that are the same way. Just they say one thing, but then they don't act that way. Again, we're not perfect. Doesn't mean we don't mess up and sin. But I also tell my kids my mistakes. They know where I struggle. You know, they know. And I admit sometimes I get on the field and I like to curse too much, you know, and I get mad and I say, hey, and sometimes I'll have a kid that'll tell me my accountability person, and man, he'll tap and say, hey coach, watch your mouth. And you know, I'll say, all right, thanks buddy, don't interrupt me while I'm talking, cussing, but I might rip your head off. But but you know, things like that. And I'm honest, I tell these guys, I try to be up front, and because so much there's so, you know, I can give you the an LEO ERO and all those things are good, but the guy from Indiana, I think he's great. You know, I think he's a, there's some guys I really respect who preach it, have a system, and I, you know, it's a, and I call it a system, but you know what, they follow it and they're good people. You could tell they're good people. You could tell they do things the right way. And as long as you're genuine and you care about the players, then everything else can fall into line. If you don't, man, you're gonna have a rough time eventually. You better win and win a lot. You know what I mean? And Because otherwise, even in the ones that think you're smart, at first that gets them in there. Winning kind of gets our kids in the door. I hope it's how we treat them and how they feel after they leave as seniors, that it's, win or lose, they feel good about their experience.
In the 2019 season, so the last full football season we had, you guys got bumped up to 5A, which is only one class. A class jump, still a big jump. So when you found out that news, did you bat an eye at all? Were you sweating at all? Were you just like, oh, whatever? We've won 7 state titles. We got this.
The only reason I didn't, 2 reasons. Well, I did bat an eye because I knew I had to play dad, so that I was not happy. Everyone always asks, why didn't you bump up? We do not want to play each other. It's my dad, and we respect them so much, and they respect us. It's a heck of a rivalry, but it's also a respected and love rivalry. There's truly respect there with the teams. It's not that Q&D, that kind of Q&D to Quincy, right? And there's a lot of heated rivalries that are good rivalries, and I think there's respect in there, but not like this. And so that part of me, I did not want to do it. Every other part of me wanted to, because I knew we had just lost to Chatham, and Chatham was really good. Obviously, they barely lost to, not barely, but they put East St. Louis good in the semifinals, and that was Chatham's best team, probably ever. And this was one of my best teams, and so I knew we had a shot, and so I was excited from that standpoint. Because everyone thinks, we couldn't do 5A every year. I think it's a big 4A to 5A we were looking, man, there's a chance we almost played Joliet Catholic in the quarterfinals. Mascoutah beat them at Joliet Catholic. So when we beat Dad, the semifinals, we thought we were going to get Joliet Catholic and then St. Rita. And I was really excited because I thought, man, this, what a dream come true. But like I said, Mascoutah beat Joliet Catholic. And so, but even St. Rita, a team that plays in the big time Catholic league and kind of a 7A team, they finally came down. So, it was like one team came up, we were the smallest, they came down. And that was just like one of those dream matchups. So it really was a fun year. And it was, but that group could do it, and I knew it. So we were excited. Again, didn't like the dad thing, but we wanted that chance. And everyone ought, people would always say, bump up, and not that I wouldn't have liked it, but I think it's unfair, and I truly believe this, and I think it's unfair to everybody else that, man, we do things the right way. I don't cheat. We don't recruit. We're a public school. We do things the right way. So why should I go up just because, because people think, because I think, again, that almost devalues all those other state championships, like, oh, we should be up. Well, we're not. We're 4A. This is who we are. It's what we are. And so I think I always was so against that. If other people want to go up for other reasons, a lot of times it's because they're doing something they think they should be going up for. And private schools, hey, I get it. If they want to go up, and my dad does things the right way too, but hey, if they want to go up, I get it. They can go up. But us in our situation, I never felt like, I almost felt like it was I felt like I was representing myself and our school and other public schools that do things the right way. Because there's Catholic schools that cheat. There's public schools that cheat. There's a lot of people out there that cheat. We don't cheat. And I don't know. That was a long answer for that. But, yeah, it was fun to naturally go up, be the smallest school because of the public league strike. It just, everything worked out. Again, I think God put us in the perfect situation at the perfect time. And I don't know why, but he did. And man, it worked out.
I think that's, you touched on something important there. Obviously, Rochester in, outside of Springfield, you're in a very nice area, nice community, but you're still a public school. You are stuck to your enrollment. You do not control the enrollment. So, and you don't control the enrollment for the classes. That is out of your hands. You're just a coach of one team. The IHSA sets these parameters and you live within them. You touched on private schools and the Notre Dames and these Catholic schools that are recruiting kids from nice areas, and they're allowed to. That's that's their prerogative, but it happens and it sucks. And but as a public school, you're dealt with the kids that enroll in your school. So it's not, I think it's personally, I just think it's ludicrous that people would want to question the validity of a program in a public situation like that. And you know, it's easy to say move up. Well, okay, you could say that about like 1A schools that win a lot. Why aren't you playing 2A? You know, you're just beating up on, you know, if you're a 1A school, that's because you're a 1A school. That's your 2A or 3, whatever the 8 classes. So I've always thought that that's ridiculous. As just like an outsider looking in, I've always wondered, not like, should Rochester move up? But I've, you know, before 2019, like you always wonder, like, what would happen if they did, you know, and you could say that about a lot of programs in smaller classes. You know, you could say that at the college level. Like I think of like Northwest Missouri, who is, you know, a powerhouse at the D2 level. I'm like, what would it, like, if they were a D1 program, how would they do? Or like North Dakota State, who is an FCS, crazy program. What if they were FBS? Like, how would they do? So, you know, I think that's a natural curiosity, but I think to like think less of a program is just ridiculous. But I want to touch on, spoiler alert, you win the 5A state title. I don't know if I saw it on Facebook, Twitter, or where it was, but I caught your post-game speech. And I'm not going to lie, you know, without sounding corny, it kind of gave me chills. It got me pumped up. You know, after listening to that and seeing you guys win, I played, you know, I've watched the game back on YouTube a couple times. Awesome game to watch. Quick little one-liner that you threw out there after the game. You know, they said, hey, move up to 5A. And then, you know, you're just like, hey, we're 5A state champs. People got what they wanted, and you win the state championship. And so an obstacle presented itself. You moved up to a class. Obviously, like you said, you know, the emotional additional stress of playing your dad in the playoffs, but then to get to 5A, so people got what they wanted, and look what happened. You won a state championship, which just further validates your program as just one of the best programs in the state, regardless of class. Yeah, so
and that's how I think the kids felt. The kids weren't stupid. I mean, if you know, you're from here, you hear all those things, right? And so you think, and we tell people, that's, man, Chatham 6A, Springfield High 6A, Griffin's 5-6A, you know, so it's like, man, we play all these guys. It's people, you know, it's like anything, you know, when you win, people want to poke holes at you. And for what, hey, how, why are they doing this? Well, there's got to be a reason, right? It can't be, hey, man, those kids work hard and they've had talent. Great. We've had great talent. We've been lucky. You know what I mean? And so people just poke. And so for that, and that group specifically, just how they were built, I mean, it was almost like we needed that. You know, I think that group, not all my groups needed that. That one did. That one needed that challenge. And it was, like I said, it was a special group. And so, but they've heard all those things. And it was like they were sticking up for all those other state championship teams. Like, man, they could have did it too. You know what I mean? And so it was a pride thing. It was protecting to them and even all of us. It was like, hey, we, you know, like you said, hey, we did it. We proved everyone wrong. And it doesn't mean, you know, I don't know how many state championships we'll win from this point. You know what I mean? You never, it's not easy. And so, but that one they can never take away, and those kids know that, and it meant a lot for them.
So are you still in the 5A enrollment bracket?
I don't think we will be. No, and the only reason I think it probably was a one-year thing because of that Chicago Public League strike. That was really the only reason we fell. Now, we've been close, but if I were guessing on average, I bet, and I think our enrollment's going to drop, actually. You know, maybe we'll beat again, but I bet it's one out of every 10 years type of thing that we'd land on being the smallest school. And that was with, like I said, that was with all the public league strike stuff. We'd have probably been the fourth or fifth highest 4A, you know, if that didn't go down. So I imagine they'll place us, you know, in the preseason coaches, whatever thing this year is a 5A, but I don't think, if I were guessing, you know, I think we'll be 4A for the next few 10 years and so on. So
quickly, you know, for anybody that's not listening, that's not in Illinois, we football coaches, we start next Wednesday, you know, a week from tonight, you know, recording this podcast. How are you tackling the start of the season with this long break that we've had with, you know, very minimal actual football contact and work in?
Yeah, that's a good question. You're probably going through the same thing, you know, of, I told someone today, I don't know the best way to explain it is, it feels like I have a new job. Like my job is, I'm so used to the process and in the seasons. And then once summer comes, I know, man, we have our schedule, everything's. So it's not that I guess I was comfortable. Right. And we're used to what we do. This is like a whole nother level of crazy of logistic stuff. how do I keep these kids separate? How am I going to get them to a game? Are we going to take a bus? Are we going to let them drive cars? How are we going to take practice? How are we going to mask? I mean, something silly. I mean, you know, these people don't think about this, how a kid's going to put on a mask, put a mouthpiece underneath it with a helmet on every play. And how do you, there's not that, see, the high schools and or the colleges and NFL that play didn't have to do that. So people weren't making that product. And so it's like, I mean, you got to make it yourself or figure out, you know, and I got lucky and found some, but I know a lot of other coaches are going through those same struggles and just the logistics of everything and the rules that you have to follow. How do you watch film? Well, we can't watch in our little team room that we had, you know, where I could get 50 kids in a small space and we just kind of, you know, toughed it out and can't do that. And so it really has changed, which I can imagine it's changed everywhere for you guys too. And anyone in Illinois right now knows, and with the ground being, there's no grass, it's muddy, it's below freezing. If you know it's going to snow again at some point, if you don't have turf, we don't have turf. I mean, it's like, gosh, dang. There's so many issues that come up that you just, I've never dealt with. And so it makes it fun. It makes it, I had a stressful day today, just on a bunch of different avenues and things that just, I've never dealt with. So it's like, it feels like it's a new job. And, but you know what? I'm so excited for these seniors. It's also going to be a different year. Hey, we're not going to be playing for a state championship. And so it's, how do you motivate these kids in the program, but I think it's kind of do itself. I think these kids are so excited to play for the seniors and give them, and we got a real good schedule. We get to play everyone tough in the conference. And so I think that'll take care of itself. I think these kids are so excited to play and to do something finally that something that maybe I would have been worried about a few months ago, how are we going to motivate them without a state championship? And you know what? I don't think I'm going to have to. So that's a good thing.
Well, you asked and answered the next question I had. No, I thank you. It makes my job easier. You know, I think at the end of the day, athletes compete. You know, they want to compete, whether you're playing for a state championship or you're 0-8 and it's week 9. If you're an athlete, you know, and you love the game, you're going to compete. So I think that we'll find out a lot about kids this year that without some of those extra motivations, if you will, without those looming over them, you find out who competitors are and also what coaches can make their kids, you know, want to compete regardless of a postseason. I think that's, you know, a challenging as a coach. And
it's challenging on both sides. You know what I mean? If you're a winner, you haven't won, you predominantly haven't won, I mean, it's challenging on all sides because it's like you said, how do I motivate these kids? And like I said, I think the biggest thing will be if you got a good, decent senior class and everyone realizes, man, they've been done wrong, whether it's right or wrong, right? They've been done. They didn't deserve this. And they right. And so the good teams, I think, will really stick behind those kids no matter what. Now, hey, some of your underclassmen, they're not, you know, it'll be interesting to see how they get dealt with. And so it'll be a very interesting year from that standpoint.
I just know, and I, you know, we've said this in our staff meetings, if we can get through this season with sports overlapping, you know, a shortened season, a shortened prep period, we can get through any season.
That's right.
So maybe exciting is not the right word. The opportunity to coach again is exciting, but I think the innovation and the challenges that face us, I think at the end of the season, we'll come out better coaches, or we should come out better coaches than, you know, going into it. So lastly, especially someone that's had your success, the question is always what's next. And, you know, that's kind of, you know, what we always end an interview on Coach Growth Podcast for a reason. You know, what are you going to do and grow? I read an article about you a while ago about, you know, coaching in college. And obviously I'm sure that comes around, you know, every year, those kind of questions, you know, you win another state title, are the college ranks in your future, that kind of thing. Do you think about that? Do you hear these, you know, like, do you hear these questions? Do you pay attention to these things?
I do. And I pay attention to myself. You know, I've told many people, I would love to do it. I got two boys. This is home. I knew what my life was like. I was very lucky and blessed. I loved my life, and I know these kids love their life. And so there's something to quality of life, you know, I also see some miserable college coaches and the lives they have. and what, you know, for all for money. And yeah, money's good. I'd like to get paid more, but you know, it's a give and take, and it's but I do think the competitive part of me would like to try it one day. I just you know, I think I'm to the point now where I'm gonna let God, if it's the right thing, I'll know, and it'll smack me in the face. And who knows, you know. And man, I got a running back coach at Western, one of my good friends, Zach Grant. You know, he just got the job there. And people like that, you know, one day if they could have something, I could work with somebody like that. And I got some other guys that played for me there in the college ranks, coaching and friends. But the other thing I've learned is you got to be around the right person. You can't just – some of these guys are crazy, man. And they're, you know, and I just can't work for a crazy person right now. And so I think I'm beyond that. And, but yeah, it's I would never say no, you know, and I don't, but it's also the question. I hope people trust me and honest. And it's also something I'm probably not looking for. You know, I love it here. And I think being a coach's son helps, because I truly saw so many people coming in and out of Dad's office. I mean, from Leslie Frazier to Coach Ferentz, you know, when he was young, and all these people and good and bad experiences. And people back then who used to tell you the stories, and you hear these stories now too. You know, I'm lucky to be in a spot where I've had some good players. There's been some great coaches that have walked through these doors, and you get a chance to talk to them, and you see what it's like. You know, it is a sacrifice. It sounds good, but like anything at that level, there's some sacrifices. And so, again, I could speak on an hour for that, but it's as a competitor, I'd love to try it. As a father, I think I'm happy where I'm at. And like I said, I think God will put me where he wants me. Right now it's here. I really believe that. And so I hope that answered it pretty good.
I think of Urban Meyer, you know, becoming the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars. No, he's proven everything he needs to prove, but like, I'm sure in the back of his mind, he's always wondered if he could make that joke, you know, that jump to the NFL. And, you know, I think everybody that's followed his career, you know, it's like, you know, could he do it? I hope he does. I'm not a Jaguars fan, but I don't, you know, I don't want to see a coach fail. But
you know what? He's getting Trevor Lawrence. I mean, what a good situation. Their team's pretty good defensively. You know what I mean? So it's not like he's taking on the Jets right now, or, you know, someone like that. And you know what I mean? Again, I think he knew, he's a smart enough guy. And I know Coach Meyer a little bit, you know, through Dad, and you know, he's smart. He knows. I mean, that he wasn't going to jump into something just to jump. Seems like a good situation. Again, you get a lifetime quarterback, I think, that kind of, you know, a guy, or at least that's what it looks like. And he must have thought that, because hey, because you're right, he didn't have anything to prove. He's financially, he's good, and you know what, life's good. He was old enough probably where he could have, man, called it quits for sure and been on TV and enjoyed the life. But man, he's a competitor. And you know, like I said, if that thing came up like that, same thing, you know, if the right place, right time, and you never know. So
just quickly, like career aspirations aside, what are some things as a coach that you would like to try to work on and improve on moving forward, you know, in your career?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, probably one thing people would be like the whole strength training aspect of things, that the kind of the off season. If you could tell, I was a quarterback, and I don't look like a quarterback. I've probably gained way too much because I hated the weight room. I don't like – you know, if I get a basketball, we go play basketball. I love it. I could play all day. But just to go run or do something, not my thing. And I know personally that's probably where I need to improve, because really, I mean, for 15 years, if I showed someone our strength training program, they'd probably be stunned by it a little bit, because it hasn't been much of one. But it's, you know, that's probably one thing I probably need to, and if it's not me, it's, hey, how do I get the right people in there doing it? You know what I mean? Cause I'm to the point now where I used to have to be in there all the time as a young coach. You know, you had to be, I was the weight strength coach. I was in the weight room there in off season. And now I'm getting, my kids are getting older. I want to go watch them. And how do I let other people take that over, but still have it done the right way? And you know what I mean? Pull back a little bit. And cause at that time I thought that's what I needed to do, was I needed to be there and have my face there and be around those kids from a relationship standpoint more than anything. And so I guess I hope that answered it, but you know, the whole strength training, speed, you know, that whole, that's the new thing, I think, right now, more than X's and O's, is that, because I'm always looking at something X and O's, and I love that, and I love that aspect. I love the, you know, I love scheming, and I love, you know what I mean? That's truly what I enjoy, and I always have enjoyed, is that side of it, coaching probably more than, and I love relationships, and I love people. I love my kids. You know, I like being around just good people. And so those are the two things I'm good at. I think it's the strength, the speed, the side, you know, is probably the one part I've really struggled with.
As a sport coach and as now the head of strength and conditioning.
There you go.
And anybody that's listening to this, you can DM me on Twitter, because I'm probably going to piss some people off. But even as the head of strength and conditioning for a football team, it's important, and you said that your off-season program is probably way less than what people think it is. What you do on, you know, what you do off the field plays into what you can do on the field, but ultimately what you do on the field is the most important thing. If you can't execute from a technical standpoint, it doesn't matter how much you squat, bench, or what your 40 time is. You know, you've won 8 state titles, and, you know, through your own words, probably not the most optimal off-season training. And so, as yeah. you know, a coach, as a young coach, remember, you know, the most important thing is the most important thing. So I just, you know, it's refreshing to hear that. I mean, so, and it's also scary to think about, like, you know, I think about Alabama. People talk about how great Alabama was, and then they just hired 2 of the best strength coaches in all of college football, and they are arguably the best team they've ever had. And so, you know, now they've, you know, there's people like, hey, maybe they'll never lose. So,
and that what makes you right. That makes the greats. And mm-hmm. you do got to have everything. And there's, you know, I'm lucky. Probably the one thing is my kids, they do, some of them go to personal trainer, you know what I mean? And so I got mm-hmm. some of that. And it is so important, especially when you're athletically, you're average, right? Or talent wise, you're average. Well, how do I get them to play above average? Right. They probably are never going to, they're God given. They're never going to be great, great athletes, but hey, they can be better. Well, how do I take that next step? It's always finding that next step. Some people do it schematically. Some people do it program. Some people do it strength training, running. You know what I mean? Some people, we all specialize in something, and knowing your avenue and not trying to specialize in everything, right? These guys that try to do everything, you see them on Twitter, they do everything. And yet they're really great at nothing, right? They're good at a lot of things and great at nothing. And that's what you got. You got to trust other people. It's probably the other thing I'll leave you with this. My dad taught, you know, you got to trust people. You got to dictate, you know, you got to direct responsibility elsewhere. You got to be able to trust your assistant coaches. You have to do those. You cannot. Number one, if you do it yourself, it's going to kill you in the long run, not kill you physically, but it's going to kill you mentally. It's going to wear you out, right? These guys, I know some high school guys that call defense, offense, special teams. It's like, man, I call offense, right? And I lead the team. But I trust my D coordinator. I trust my special teams guy. And I got to trust my strength training guy, right? I got to do all these things. And those are the great coaches that have great people around them. And I'm lucky I got great coaches around me that have been there for a while. And, you know, because it's hard to specialize, right? We all have gifts and we all have things we like. And you got to find that thing and be great at that and find others that can help you in other aspects.
Well, Coach, thank you for your time. There's been, you know, it's been great talking with you. You've said some incredible things, some great advice in there. Just closing out, where can people find you? Like, what are you on? Where can they reach out to you?
Man, I hate to admit this. I think Twitter at Coach Leonard 3. But I am now nothing else. I'm not on Facebook. I'm not on, I'm not on much. So you can find me in Rochester, Springfield most of the time. So, but I am on Twitter. I do a little bit enjoy Twitter. That kind of gets my news, but that's Coach Leonard 3. So if anyone ever needs anything, please don't be afraid to email or call. And I've learned a lot from a lot of people, and I don't know if anyone learned anything from me, but man, if you ever need anything, anybody, the Rochester email and please get a hold of me, and I'd love to help in any aspect. So
awesome. Well, Coach, again, thank you so much for your time. It's been great chatting with you.
All right. Thank you for having me, Andrew. Appreciate it.